Right, we're joined on the programme now by Beatrice Hughes, Research Ireland candidate and third-year PhD student at University College Dublin. Good morning to you, Beatrice.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. Right, you're conducting a study entitled Unwanted Consensual Sex, the Implications for Women. So before we perhaps throw the net out there to see who might want to get involved, what is the Can you explain the title a bit more and what specifically you're researching?
Absolutely. I suppose what the study is trying to do is that I'm trying to get a better understanding of the experience for women of engaging in sex that they don't desire. The kind of sex maybe that they just feel that they should be having sex at times when they're actually don't have any desire for sex themselves. And it's not because a partner is putting direct pressure on them, but really just because they feel that they should.
And what might that be down to? The obvious might be that someone is not sexually attracted to their partner anymore, but they, you know, they believe that this is, you know, part of the deal, in inverted commas, a crude way to put it. But it is still their choice, though, right?
Absolutely, it is their choice. But I think there can be many reasons why women will agree to sex that they don't desire. And sometimes it's because they love a partner and it's a way, intimacy is important to them in the relationship. And it's a compromise that they're happy to participate in. But I think for others, maybe at times patterns and expectations can develop, and it can just make it very difficult sometimes for women to say no to sex. And if a partner's desire for sex is a lot higher than the woman's, then consistently saying no to a partner can feel like rejection for the partner, and it can be just a difficult situation to be in. I don't think it necessarily means that the woman no longer finds her partner sexually attractive. It may just mean that they're tired or they're not in the mood, or there may be times when they would enjoy sex, but at that particular time, possibly not.
Okay, so you're interested in people then who might enjoy sex on one occasion, on a particular occasion, but then may not the next.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd often find in relationships, at the start of a relationship, that the sex can be very enjoyable for both partners, and it can be quite frequent. And that can change then over time, you know, when the honeymoon period is over and maybe when children come along or other stresses in life impact on people's lives. So I think it's something that you know, our sexuality is something that's quite fluid. That there are times that we'll, you know, have more sexual desire than others. And I suppose the study is just trying to really focus on the experience. And it's not saying either that only women have this experience. Men indeed can have this experience as well, as can trans women, lesbians, gay men, all kinds of people in all kinds of relationship formations. But the research that would suggest that women tend to agree to sex that they don't desire on a far higher rate than men do. So this is why I'm particularly interested in the experience for women. And like you mentioned there are social norms as well and expectations around...
The societal pressures as well. I mean, there might be younger women, for an example, who feel, you know, that sex... They've been conditioned to believe that sex is an essential part of the progress of a relationship, even if that's perhaps for moral reasons or for whatever reasons, personal reasons, they don't want to engage. But... like, how do you differentiate? So, you know, are we giving something, something that's, how do I phrase this, right? So, obviously, there's got to be people that sometimes they're into it, sometimes they're not, right?
Yeah.
And then they sort of balance it out and they go, well, you know, I'll take one for the team tonight because my other half seems really interested. Is that not potentially just a regular part of life? And really, you're trying to give something that is just part of existing a name, if that makes sense.
Well, this is it. This is one of the things that it doesn't really have a name. And for some people, that will be just fine to occasionally have sex that they don't desire. And it works for them. But for others... I think it can really develop into a habit and an expectation where they're consistently engaging in sex that they don't desire. This also leads to very performative sex, you know, where women are performing desire, their performing pleasure, performing orgasm, faking orgasm, just to seem like they are actually enjoying sex. And really, they just want it to be over, you know, and that is the reality. And it's very much a hidden reality, I would say, for a lot of women out there.
All right.
And,
so you're
and in, I suppose yep, what I'm ahead. Hoping to do is just make it a bit more visible.
So you're inviting people who may be interested in talking about this to do so completely privately and confidentially. How do people get in touch if they want to be part of it?
Okay, there's a number that people can reach me on, and this is a research phone. It's 085-156-4958. And I can also be reached on email at beatrice.hughes@ucdconnect.ie. I have a poster connected to the research as well that I can send on to you.
Yeah,
maybe
sure.
You can put that
okay.
up on
and,
the
and
website.
Why might people want to get involved in this, do you think? Is it just to help? To I don't know. Like I also wonder, because I haven't really come across one that made me go, you know what, this is something I need to engage in any area, if you know what I mean. So why do you think people might go, actually, do you know what, that's I can relate to that. I'm going to get involved. Why do people do that? Or what is it that motivates people, do you think?
I think when the experience resonates with them. I think if women are listening and they think, you know, this is all too familiar.
She's talking about my life here.
This story. And if it's something that has impacted them negatively and maybe that they've never spoken of or never even fully acknowledged to themselves or another person, I think they're the kind of people who tend to want to come forward. And also people who feel that maybe it has turned into a negative in their relationship, something that has become harmful or has had negative implications for them. They're the kind of women who I would find would like to come forward. And they come forward really in the hope that the research is going to help shine a light on this area and this issue and maybe pave the way, I suppose, in some way for others following in their footsteps, that they won't find themselves in a similar situation.
Okay. We'll retain your details, obviously, here, Beatrice, in case anyone wishes to find out more. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks
Bye.
For having me on.
Take care. Bye. Beatrice Hughes there, who's a Research Ireland candidate, third-year PhD student at University College Dublin. Is that something you might be minded to get involved in? It's an interesting one, I suppose. The Hurling Sticks. Now, I must say, we were not inundated with people upset at the Hurling Sticks on the roundabout. I just have to be very clear about that. And to be honest with you, I could have answered this myself. But the Hurling Sticks are up as St Union's are due to play in the Ulster Intermediate Hurling Championship. They'll be coming down after that. Hopefully they'll stay up. They're in the final, are they? I was going to say if they progress, they could stay up. They'll be coming down after that. Has that person seen the tin men decorated before matches? The same thing is done in Strabane on their tin people. I don't think people are... As I say, one person that we got contact with had an issue. I don't think we should over sort of emphasise that either, but give it the prominence that it deserves. On the situation in the Middle East. Hi, Greg. How could two men, one a convicted felon and the other a war criminal, both guilty of genocide and mass ethnic cleansing, construct a viable peace plan for Palestine? No people with such dark hearts, with threats to finish the job that's murdered tens of thousands more, could possibly consider peacemakers. And who did they select as a transitional governor? Another war criminal, Tony Blair. It was interesting, Jim Gavin was asked yesterday about, and he didn't really address it directly, about Donald Trump receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. And he sort of says, we'll wait and see what comes of it. So I'm not sure he sort of got exactly the tone of that question or how it was put to him. Nobody to vote for, says the listener, in the presidential election. I am not a fan of dictatorship and disgusted with Donegal County Council. I'm 74 and this is my first time I'll not vote. That's some of the reaction we've been getting to last night's first presidential debate. Paddy Rooney, our political analyst, joins us on the show now. Paddy, I suppose overall, before we dig into it a little bit, your overall assessment of last night's show.
Well, every time, Greg, that I go to sit down to watch one of these kind of debates, you know, whether they're in national or presidential elections here, I always do it with the sense of anticipation that I'm going to hear something new for the first time or that it's actually going to change my way of thinking in relation to how I vote. And invariably, I'm most always disappointed, and I certainly was last night. I mean, that's 1 hour and 20 minutes. I don't think, Greg, that I'm going to get my life back, I'm afraid. And I suppose the election is 24 days away, and it's hard to know what kind of an impact these debates have anyway, because by the time the election comes round, we will have all forgotten what happened last night. But of course, you can't win it, but of course, you can lose it, I suppose, if you have a Brian Lenihan moment or a Sean Gallagher moment. Now, none of the three candidates had that last night, but if you had that, then they could seriously damage their chances. But it was a sort of an all-round, fairly damp squib affair, really, wasn't it?
I often find that the debates in the presidential election, it's not about the presidential election. I mean, and that maybe talks to the role or the view of the role, straight in talking about America, talking about the Middle East, talking about Germany, you know, then on to talking about policing in the capital, migration, the use of flags. I thought maybe actually the use of the Irish flag was quite important maybe to that role in showing leadership or what have you. But, like, Catherine Connolly's views on the German war machine, maybe I should have more of an interest in them. But, like, I thought, what has this got to do with how I might vote if I do in 24 days?
Well, you see, this is the thing about the way that these things are all teased out. I mean, Mary Regan in The Independent a couple of weeks ago said that the Irish electorate vote with their wallet in a Dáil election, but they vote with their values in a presidential election. And I suppose that's why in the opening comments, the three candidates, you know, Heather Humphreys was talking about being a grandmother, a mother, and having a daughter, and the credit union, and women hold things together, and Jim Gavin was talking about he wore the blue beret and he had the flak jacket and he was the UN missions and he served his country. And Catherine Connolly was all about being a campaigner and all of this kind of stuff. But the problem was that Kieran Cuddy, he wasn't having any of that. He wanted to go into these places, whether they wanted to go there or not. And, you know, they were putting all the motherhood and apple pie stuff. But he was, you know, there was one occasion he said to Jim Gavin, he threw his hands up in the air. He said, I don't want to hear anything more about task forces. And he talked to Heather Humphreys about the waters around Ireland unprotected because your government have boats that are mothballed in Holbein. And, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And he said to Jim Gavin as well, who are we to tell the Palestinians to who they want to have as government? So he was dictating it a lot. And
Fair to ask those Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin constantly to defend sort of government spending or government policy, be it in relation to crime, policing? I mean, this is a non-political role, right? Now, obviously, they're being put forward by the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, but really, to be questioning them about the parties that nominated them, their history in government, for a role that is apolitical, is that even relevant?
But it's always happens, like, and it put Catherine Connolly at a huge advantage last night because she's been into Dáil now since 2016, and she's been an independent ever since then. And she actually said it last night: "I'm not part of any political party." And here was Jim Gavin, a complete novice. And he was brought in to talk about all those thorny things that haven't worked out. You know what they are. You've talked about them, the crime, the housing, the protection of the international waters and so on and so forth. And the very same with Heather Humphreys. And both of them, they found it very, very heavy going to be talking about that kind of stuff, because Jim Gavin in particular was almost straying off the line about having to defend government policy, stuff that he wasn't part of in any shape or form. And you see, Catherine Connolly then is in a huge advantage, Greg, because she can point out all of these things. She doesn't have to put forward any solutions, in fact. All she has to do is just hammer the other two for supporting.
But then
what
she was questioned
the last 10 years.
In terms, like, she was questioned at one point about the Labour Party, what they're doing in Germany, and then the Labour Party in Ireland supporting Catherine Connolly, and if that was awkward, like, you know. Political parties are completely different things in different countries. I didn't understand that line.
It was
a wee bit desperate. Like, I mean, what the hell is what Labour do in Germany got to do with a handful of Labour people in Ireland supporting Catherine Connolly? I was like, seriously?
This is the thing, you know. It was just, I don't know, is this a means of testing somebody's mettle, or what are they going to be like under pressure? Because you're right, it more or less had nothing got to do with it at all. I suppose one of the things, anyway, is that of the three candidates so far, the election's only in its infancy. Catherine Connolly is the one of the three that has a tendency to go off script here. You know, she was talking about the global industrialization or the militarism in Germany at the moment being akin to what the Nazis were doing in 1930. And Kieran Cuddy was onto that like a shot. You know the story about what she said about Hamas being part of the fabric in Palestine and all that. And the other two, Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin, I mean, they're obsessed about doing one thing, Greg, and that's about not saying something that's going to hammer them. So they have to try and get through this 1 hour and 20 minutes by talking a lot but actually saying nothing. And I suppose if you poke Catherine Connolly, I suppose that's what he was trying to do here, to prod her, to see would she say something that would make headlines the following day. But she, you know, she held her ground, and I mean, she didn't go off.
I just feel when people are interviewing Catherine Connolly that they don't have the tools to challenge her on her points of view, right? So if you wanted to really dig into the Hamas being a fabric of, firstly, the question was strangely phrased to her on the BBC that started this whole conversation. But I've heard her being questioned on RTE about that. And sometimes when you're asking a question as a journalist, it's a means to an end. But sometimes I think the journalists are running around like they don't know what the right answer is. Right? They don't know what the right answer is. So if you say, you know, they're not saying what you mean Hamas should, they don't know what the answer is that they're trying to pin her down on, because they don't actually have the knowledge themselves. And it's not a policy, it's just an idea. And to be honest with you, right, whether you like it or not, Hamas are responsible for an awful atrocity on October 7th, but it never started on October 7th. Hamas is not necessarily a group of 1,000 individuals. It could be it could be nationalism, it could be whatever it might be, you know what I mean? So obviously, the ideology, if not the leaders of it, are part of the Palestinian people. But people question her to try and root that out, but they don't really know what they're trying to root out.
They don't, but I think that Micheál Martin, there was nothing wrong really with what she said, because she was right in the fact that Hamas were democratically elected. Now, it's a long time ago, it was 2006, I believe, so it's almost 20 years ago, and that it was part of the fabric. I mean, where do people think that Hamas came out of? Did they just drop down out of the sky? Of course they're part and parcel of the fabric of Palestine, and they wouldn't be able to survive without the support of the people. But what happened, though, was that Micheál Martin and Simon Harris in particular, I think, set out to twist and turn what she had actually said, because Micheál Martin was on the, I remember him being interviewed on the news, and he had contorted his face about this horrible thought that she was praising Hamas in some way. I mean, she was stating a fact here. I mean, Kieran Cuddihy, I think, said, was it to Heather Humphreys, who are we to, when she was blowing off about Hamas, you know, who are we to tell the Palestinians to govern them? If they have a free elections there and Hamas win those elections, I mean, who's anybody to tell us?
What are we debating this
tell us
for?
About? You're winning,
I would like to drill down. I know this sounds stupid, but I'd have been more interested if Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin have an intention to learn Irish. Or if there is a red line of a bill that they might refer to the Supreme Court, you know, or if they, there's just so many, what they might do see as their leadership role in Northern Ireland, and what do they intend to do about that in terms of visiting or meeting certain leaders or what have you, what they might try and do to improve relations with countries where, you know, we don't have good relations, stuff that's within the control of the presidency, but none of that seems to have been discussed,
you see,
at all.
Yeah, and Kieran Cuddihy, you know, he was very entertaining in his own right, you know, but he was very tabloidy, Greg, because he was going at this stuff. And you're perfectly right, because any time at all that any of the three candidates started to touch on the topics that you're talking about there, he just went way off at a tangent completely and started to poo-pooed the whole thing. Because that's exactly what should be the issue here. Catherine Connolly started off her contribution speaking Irish, and she finished her contribution speaking Irish. And Jim Gavin and Heather Humphreys had just a couple of words here and there. And absolutely, because, you know, it's still in the Constitution that Irish is in the first language, isn't it? And something should be said on that. And if they don't have it already, Why don't they have
an intent to learn? It shows some leadership.
Yeah.
Like talking about military spending, and with all due respect to the moderator, like the military spending we're talking about going future is radar. It's anti-cyber stuff. It's not in those boats that are being tied up. That's not what our future military spending is on. It's infrastructure to sort of aid the European defence, so to speak. So I thought that was a bit of a conflation as well as there. But I mean, obviously the line about boats being tied up was one that had been agreed.
It was very tabloidy because look at Greg, how many boats or naval vessels are we going to have to deploy?
We're not going to police our waters. We're not going to police our waters with naval vessels. Okay? It's going to be with different technology.
Say for instance, if we decided to do it, Greg, somebody needs to ask the question then of the 100 billion of public spend that the government have, that they're going to take away a chunk of that and they're going to spend it on providing naval ships. What spending is going to be foregone as a result of that? Are they going to reduce the number of public servants in the country by 50%, or are they going to cut social welfare by 50%? You never have that conversation. There was one other thing that stood out for me last night, though, and I had this sense all along while I was watching the programme. And it was a bit like the character in the Shakespearean play, Banquo's ghost. Their spirit was in the room, but they weren't physically there. Could you imagine if Mairead McGuinness was there instead of Heather Humphreys? And we'd say Princess Peter Casey was there and Bertie Ahern was there instead of Jim Gavin. And of course, Maria Steen, right? We would have a totally different, I suspect, campaign here. And there would be a lot more sparks flying because you may well know, I don't know Jim Gavin, I never met him, but he looks like a gentleman. He's not going to offend anybody. Heather Humphreys, I don't think, has offended anybody ever in her life. And whatever about Catherine Connolly, she had a square-off moment with Jim Gavin one time when he asked him, had Israel achieved their military objectives in Gaza? But it's all very polite. I mean, you compare that with, say, for instance, with the presidential election in America last year between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, or indeed what went on in the UK between Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer. There was a lot more punch and a lot more sparks and a lot more punches throwing and received. There was nothing in this. This was like a sort of a...
Yeah, but they agree basically on
outing or whatever.
They agree basically on immigration, right? So there's a lot of people in Ireland, whether they're right or wrong, are not happy with the amount, with the extent of immigration in this country. But they are all of kind of the same view that, you know, they're also about inclusivity. Now, I think that's a very good message, but I think for a lot of people are saying, yeah, all for inclusivity, but, you know, what about us? Like, you talked of alternative voices there. Like, I know they're very different people, but fundamentally, they represent what percentage of the population? 50%? Now, just because Sinn Féin back Ms. Connolly, it doesn't mean that she gets that 20% support, right? So, like, what percentage do you think of people in Ireland, their views, do those three people represent? Do you get where I'm... It's a poxy question, but I just feel a lot of people watching that and they were like, none of these people get me.
Yeah, well, you see, you know, you and I have talked about this before and others in your programme about... The Jim Gavin and Heather Humphreys are both representing the two biggest parties, and they between them now they're only able to get 40% of the electorate, and that's 40% of 59% that actually vote. So if you look out the window there, Greg, and you count every five people that walk down the road, there's only one of them now supporting the government, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. Not either or, but both. You know, that's all we're talking about here. And Catherine Connolly then is an independent and she's getting whatever she's getting from. She's supposed to have the support of the combined left to have 36% of the vote in Dáil-Éireann, but she won't have that either, I suspect. She may not. There's dissension within the Labour Party. They voted 60-40 to support her. So you're absolutely right. You know, there's no point saying that the three candidates on offer that 80% of the electorate out there or the people that they represent their views, because very clearly they don't.
Mm. Yeah. Unfortunately
now, Greg, we have the system, whether it's good, bad or indifferent, that lots of others that were bidding for this, they weren't able to get over they weren't able to meet the bar and get on the nomination papers.
I thought the conversation about neutrality was interesting. And I mean, you know, there was a little bit of rehearsed answers there. And I think as people had to step out of those rehearsed answers, they struggled a little bit. But I think the conversation about neutrality might be the one of all of that that motivates people, to be honest with you, to pick a candidate out of those three, because I think that's a big issue to a lot of people, this whole conversation about the triple lock and what that might mean. Our actual independence, our actual neutrality and us using that role. I must say, and I'll be honest, Catherine Connolly said some of the stuff on the show last night that I've said on this programme before, that I think that that's what we should actually... But then you drill down with her on that and say, well, do we not take in Ukrainians because we don't want to pick a side politically? Do you know, just to use that as an example? But they never went down that route, or those types of questions weren't asked. But did you find the conversation about neutrality at all interesting?
Absolutely, because I noticed that Jim Gavin took the definitely the Fianna Fáil line about the triple block, that needs to be dismantled, whereas Heather Humphreys really didn't sort of sidestep it, but Catherine Connolly was very much of the view that it should be retained. I mean, I'm of the view anyway that it has to be retained. I mean, how in the name of heavens, Greg, can Ireland be sending military deployment overseas to a unit when there isn't an honourable third party that doesn't have skin in the game, that doesn't endorse this? Because we're getting into something then, I know Thomas Pringle put it very well in your programme there a few weeks ago, we're getting into something then that we don't have any international mandate for. I mean, people are talking about our democratic deficit and democratic values, and Dáil Éireann should be able to decide this. Absolutely not. It needs to be something far greater and far wider than this. Imagine us being over, we'll say, for instance, and if the war in the military in the Irish Unified Forces in South Lebanon, and if Hezbollah decided to get, well, they were trying to, but they were put back into their box. But if they decided to escalate the same thing as Hamas did in Palestine, I mean, Irish troops would be right bang in the middle of that. We don't have an international mandate then to be there. And what will we do? End up taking sides? I mean, the consequences of that would just be too horrible to think, right?
Yeah, this is just an assessment, and this is my own opinion. I think Heather Humphreys will need to up her game in the next debate, because I think I can say this. It felt to me like maybe she was just asked to turn up 5 minutes before it and, you know, seek to become the president. It's almost as if she was just there by default that, you know... It may not, you know, when you look at someone and it may not, you get the impression it actually doesn't mean quite as much to them as they're stating. That's probably terribly unfair. She's probably living and dying for it. Don't get me wrong. I don't know how to phrase it. It just felt like she, anyway, go on. She's campaigning hard on the ground.
I was going to say, well, you know, I had to do a bit of homework for this gig this morning. You know, I wasn't like Heather Humphreys. I just didn't turn up and switch on. You know, I had to read a bit of the newspapers and so on and so forth. So I think if you look at some fair-minded independent commentator on this, so Paul Cunningham of RTE said that she was the quietest of the three. She never interjected. She always waited for Kieran Cuddihy to come round to her. And that's fine, you know, but I don't think she's going to get away with that. That's why I mentioned earlier to you, Greg, about the people that weren't there, because McGuinness wouldn't put up with that. You know, she'd be there, right there, out there, fighting her point. But I suppose, look, I said earlier on about people voting in a presidential election about their value system. Neutrality is going to be a factor, for sure. And Jim Gavin is trying to equate the point, this is the Fianna Fáil message anyway, that the retention of the triple lock is not the same as holding on to neutrality. But I think that Catherine Connolly is going to be standing on more firmer ground there. And you're perfectly right about Heather Humphreys. But is it in her nature, though, to do that? Because when she was ever in Dáil Éireann doing leader's questions on the occasion when she was filling in for the leader of Fine Gael or whatever, I mean, there was times that she was struggling very badly on it.
Right. I mean, like, I want to know their views, firstly, about the Irish language. I mentioned that. But it's preservation, the enhancement of it, what they might use that role for. I think in terms of the amount of young people that are emigrating, I would love to hear them discuss that, but not get into the housing and the this, that and that, or they could do, but talk about that. Why are so many people leaving? What are the plans, you know, in terms of United Ireland, or what role they may have in relation to that? You know, what bills, if any, they might be inclined? And I know I'm repeating some of the stuff, but there's a lot of Irish stuff that they could probably really have a good debate on. Her views on the German military complex, you know,
but you
or
see,
any of their views on
Greg,
it.
Yeah, but it's not her fault, because that was the question she
no,
was
I'm,
asking.
Yeah, no, I get you. Yeah, I'm not criticising
them.
It's his
them. Fault. I mean, he came across, as I said, he was very, very... Kieran Cuddy, he was actually very, very impressive in a way. And RTE are doing the next one, I think it's next Sunday night. And whoever's going to do it for RTE are going to have to, because he was actually very entertaining in a way, you know. And what he said and the wee little acerbic quips he was putting in there, here and there. But you're right, they were dealing far too much with foreign policy issues and save the world issues that have nothing got to do with the president.
And I will say in fairness to him, Kieran, who I don't know, of course, like, because of the scale of the show and the people, there's a production team. They were trying to sort of get a situation whereby people learnt more about the candidates, and they picked up, you know, on a couple of key issues that it wouldn't all be down to the presenter. Obviously, he has his input, but a production team decided sort of the tone of that, and he did well within that, if you know what I'm saying. But as I say, it's just, I think there's a lot of topics you could get a really good debate going on that are actually maybe very much directly affecting us here. But anyway, go on, Paddy.
I was going to say that, you see, the remit of the president is so small and so tight that if you confined yourself to the remit of the president, I suppose the debate could last about 20 minutes.
Yeah, but
there were a lot of things you said.
I gave
five
or six good subjects there about the future of the language.
You could start then
digging into accusations that maybe Fine Gael are, you know, not necessarily doing as much as they could, or Fianna Fáil, or the you could get into Catherine Connolly about, you know, with the population doubling in the next 5 or 6 years, is it ever more that we focus in that? You could get some interesting conversations from her.
You know,
there's lots there that you think you could.
And I promise now, Greg, I'm never going to mention Maria Steen's name again, right?
I'm never going to mention it again,
but I just must do it once more. It's a pity she wasn't there, because could you imagine if Kieran Cuddihy had asked her, if she was there, which she wasn't, if there was a bill passed by the Oireachtas put in front of you that extended the measures in relation to the termination of pregnancy, what would you do with it? Mm-hmm. So the answer to that would be worth the TV licence
fee
alone.
Of course, but you also could have asked a similar question to the three that were there on certain matters. I asked Catherine Connolly about the triple lock. Would she refer that bill? She said, effectively, no. Now, I would think on a national stage, that would have been really quite an interesting little debate, because maybe Jim Gavin then could have said, oh, right, OK, so you're a bit a la carte on the triple lock. Do you know, there are questions there that could, and you're quite right. But I also think, whether I agree or disagree with Maria Steen politically, and that's irrelevant, there is a large percentage of the population who she would represent. And there's a strong argument that those people should be represented in that debate as well, whether or not you agree or disagree with her. This is a democracy.
Yeah, because you see, there's no point, I mean, you made the point yourself very well earlier on, there's no point for me and all the other people that are voters out there that we get a choice with three candidates that are largely representing the same thing. Catherine Connolly is marginally different than the other two. And I said I wouldn't mention her name before again, so I won't mention it, but an extraordinary thing.
Can I just say, keep mentioning the name, because I'm going to get accused of trying to tell you not to, and you know that's not the story here.
But an extraordinary thing, the last poll that was carried out by Ireland thinks, now there was about 10 names on it, and the lady we are referring to that we can't
Maria
mention her
Steen,
name,
we can't
was in
stop
2%.
It.
But apparently Michael McDowell, that was in one of the Sunday papers, told another politician who told a journalist, this is secondhand, about the fact that he was concerned about nominating her because it was a chance she could win, even though she was only at 2% in the polls. And he referenced two things. David Cameron stood up at a Conservative Party conference in 2014 and he announced that he was going to have a referendum on Brexit, knowing very well in his soul that it had absolutely no chance of succeeding. We know how that worked out.
Yep.
And when Ed Miliband retired as leader of the Labour Party, and there was four or five of mainstream leaders there, and somebody decided to throw Jeremy Corbyn in to keep everybody happy. Look how that worked.
Well, listen, if Maria Steen or somebody else was in there last night, it would have shifted the dial. Whichever direction it would have shifted it, it might have made people more passionate to vote for Jim Gavin. I'm not saying it necessarily would have swung all the way to her. But unfortunately, if you are not centre-left, right, you kind of, nothing happened last night that would interest you in the slightest. That's Paddy, it's always an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for giving us so generously of your time. And we'll chat again. We might check in after the next one. I'm joined in studio by two guests, Billy Bander, a social worker who you'd be familiar with on this programme. Billy, thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much, Vic.
Good to have you with us. And you're here backing up Aidan, who is a young car enthusiast. Aidan, good morning to you.
Thank you.
You are a Lexus owner.
Yeah.
You love the Lexus. You have your own car.
Yeah.
What's it like? What colour?
Red and gold.
Lovely. Modified?
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. What do you... at the moment, though, you can't really use your car because you can't go on the main roads, obviously. You would like to see somewhere where, you know, guys like you, girls like you, not girls like you, but guys like you, and including girls, could get together and just enjoy the cars in a safe environment.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it. I'll tell you, start off with, effectively, you want a place that's safe for young people to diff.
Yeah, definitely.
And there was a spot, wasn't there, at Ferry's Yard, which would have been the go-to place.
Yeah.
But it's closed now.
Closed now.
Right. And you're of the view, are you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I have a fair idea, Aidan, that, you know, certain people are going to take risks anyway to get out in the car.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous in and of itself, isn't it? Billy, it's important, isn't it, that people like Aidan, you know, advocate on behalf of themselves as well as you being here to support them. Why are you supporting Aidan's calls here?
For simple reasons. First of all, this was Aidan's initiative, and we thought let's support his voice anyway, because normally nobody really listens to the young voices anyway. And so he decided to write to the county council. And then we suggested Highland Radio because he'll probably give, councillors as well. And then we thought he'll get a bigger audience with Highland anyway. Mm. So that's why we, you know, we wrote to Highland and, you know, we're here now.
Yeah.
For them, actually, I think, because I'll take an example on Aidan himself. Okay, he travels the length of the country just to go and see a good diffing event. Okay, they had it in Ferries, and then now it's all gone. He's been to Mondello. Week in, week out, he's probably in Nuts Corner. You know, Derry.
And Aidan, down the country, there are safe sort of... Talk to me a little bit about that. What facilities are elsewhere?
Like the likes of Mondello Park in Kildare. There's Nuts Corner in Antrim. Derry City Waste in Derry.
And what, you land down with the car in a trailer...
Offload it and go different for the day, basically.
Yeah. And it's competition?
No, not really.
Yeah, it's just a space where you can
fun.
Do it. Yeah.
Better crack,
All right, and it's good for you too, because you don't risk running the foul of Gardaí or anything like that there. You know, you're safe and secure. But there's nothing like that in Donegal at the moment.
There's Manor.
Yeah.
There's Drift Track and Manor, but Ferries, you never sat in a queue. Manor, you do.
Right, okay, I get you. So this then, I mean... You know, Billy, we have a unfortunately a terrible road safety record in this country, and I'm
very
not
bad.
Saying it's all down to, you know, bad driving or anything like that there, but, you know, you need a space sometimes where young people can let off some steam.
Absolutely. We've actually looked at recreational facilities for young people, okay, even just like summer, okay, you see a lot of antisocial behaviours because there's nothing recreational for young people. If they can get... like Ferries, which they all have anyway, you see them coming in from Derry and all that. If they can get Ferries and then it is in a controlled environment, I think there'll be less of diffing within towns and, you know, creating, you know, unnecessary...
On the junctions and junctions and all that kind of stuff,
Yeah.
Not to mention the noise pollution for people. Now, like, I know people should say, well, you shouldn't do it one way or other, but for some people, their car is everything. They don't go out necessarily. They don't drink.
Yeah. You put all the money into the car.
Every shilling you get is, right, well, I want to replace that, or I want to do this, or I want to adjust that, right? So, I mean, obviously, you're going to want to use your what you've invested in, Billy.
Absolutely. Look, I think he can speak for himself anyway, in terms of noise pollution and all that. Okay, and there's ways in which most of his tracks do it.
Mm.
Okay, would you talk about DT, how they control the noise?
Yeah, like the likes of Drift Track Manor have like full exhaust needed, no limiter bashing outside the track or anything like that.
All right, okay. But is that good enough? Are people happy with that?
People,
but I suppose
really
the noise of the in diffing, it's about diffing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, if you're going down Letterkenny Main Street, whether people like it or not, you know, you might be more interested in the sound of your exhaust. Yeah. For diffing, it's literally just about the
burn
control
off,
of the
set
car.
Tires,
yeah, exactly. All right, okay.
We all run away from that doing, you know, the rally and all that.
Yeah.
So you're saying, and we're all saying then, so if you're considering, if a local authority is considering permission or something, think about some of these measures, like quieter exhaust. What was the other stuff you mentioned?
No limiter bashing outside the track.
What does that mean?
Revving.
Like that kind of stuff. Yeah. All right, okay.
And then you can cap it to 10 p.m. In a controlled environment.
Yeah.
Have you had any response back from the councillors you've written to Aidan? Nothing yet?
Nothing yet.
All right, okay. Billy, I think it's important the councillors engage, whether they agree or disagree, engage.
Absolutely. And they were the first people we wrote to anyway. So like I said from beginning, we thought, look, let's go to Highland. Maybe, you know, we were hoping that you give us an audience, and which is what you've given us.
Yeah.
And it is for his voice and probably many others anyway,
mm.
because he goes into these circles and they speak about the same language.
Yeah, but you see, we don't do it on this show, but we can be far too quick sometimes to demonize a certain group of individuals rather than engaging, right? And sort of saying, okay, this is your passion. You know, that millions of euro comes into this county every year with the Donegal Rally. So inevitably people are going to start, you know, loving their cars, etc.
Yeah.
Find that they want a safe place. They're prepared to, you know, not make modifications to the car if that's what's required. Work with them.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Give them the respect, you know.
100%. It's exactly that, actually. You see, I know sometimes we all, you know, given this set of rules to follow and then you don't follow them. Okay, the limiter bashing and all that. Okay, it's basically maybe something to do with themselves because they do that and then the authorities are saying don't do that.
Yeah.
And then they go into it. Okay, yes, probably they'll be, you know, they'll take the blame themselves.
Yeah.
But with enforced rules, I think, you know, this industry can actually be...
But see, the way I see it is, say, for instance, there was a plague of skateboarders down at the
Market Square.
Jumping around the place flat out, you know, doing grinds and all that kind of stuff. The logical thing is, let's build a skate park outside the town.
Yeah.
Do you know? Because it gives them somewhere to do that, and it leaves that space there for people to enjoy. That's the normal sort of logical way you deal with things.
And that's how he's looking at it anyway.
Yeah.
All right, Aidan. Well, listen, you know, the message is out there. I think it'd be very interesting, I think, for councillors to engage with you. I think it's positive that you've taken this approach. You just want to be able to enjoy the car that's one of the most important things to you in a safe, legal environment and then head home safe.
Yeah.
It's not much else than that, is it? Right. Okay. And Billy, you're backing him.
And I'm backing him, yeah.
And it's not just Aidan. There's lots of other people who, you know, often find themselves demonised, but they just want to be able to enjoy their stuff. Right?
You see it in their groups, you know, when they're chatting, you can tell they're backing each other on this, just that he took up the initiative, you know.
Yeah. All right, Aidan, we'll make inquiries to the council, and if any of the local authority members are listening, maybe they just didn't see your email or the letter or however you communicated to them. They might want to engage with you or chat to you. I mean, you mentioned ferries. Yeah. It doesn't have to be there. You know, it could be somewhere else. Who's to say? Yeah. We don't know. All right. Good man, Aidan. Thanks,
Thank
Billy.
You.
Appreciate
Thank you very
it.
Much.
Appreciate it. Okay. That's Billy and Aidan there. 086 60 25,000 if you have... And we got that letter was sent out actually on the 9th of September. So we're heading for 3 weeks on and you still had no response, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So there you go. That's that. Right. Just a couple of comments to get through, lads. You can jog on if you want to. You can sit to the end of the show. I don't mind, but I'm finished with yous now. Just in terms of the presidential election, a caller says the three candidates said they'd be a president to represent all the people of Ireland. The political persuasion and the policies they support can never represent me. A vast majority don't have a choice in this election if all conscience cannot vote for any of them. The debate was just babble. A few callers saying that they didn't feel any of the three represented them and therefore they couldn't be motivated to vote. A caller says, having watched the debate, I feel no excitement about meeting any of the three of them. At least the former and present presidents felt interesting and worthy of doing their job. Another watching the debate last night, I think that the only good candidate would have been the presenter, Kieran Cuddihy. Well done, Kieran. He was the only one who appealed to me. That's interesting. A caller says, wish one of them had said they're going to get Martin and Harris to sort out the problems in this country instead of flying all around the world. These other countries not interested in them. Jim said on an interview, RTE interviews in favour of getting rid of the triple lock. Yeah, indeed, and he stood by that. Listen, loads more of those that I'll carry into the show tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening to the programme, or if you chose to watch it, it's great to have you on board. We'll be back with the show live again, of course, tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, have a fantastic Tuesday.